tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is a Tuesday, the 31st of March, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, today I've got news about an EU Parliament conference, which has been hearing about how the European continent is on track for civil war. This is interesting because Mark Collette has talked about this, and he was talked about it at the Patriotic Alternative Conference last year, as how he believes that we are going to see more sectarianism as we go on into the rest of the 20s, and we will see these different ethnic groups effectively picking sides, and we could then see trouble between them, as we have already seen. Between, for instance, say, the Hindus and the Pakistanis over the cricket. The trouble that we see now over Israel's invasion of Palestine and Gaza and Iran. And we see these protests that are out on the streets taking sides, depending on which ethnic group you belong to. So Mark's been talking about this for a long time. And now it seems the mainstream politicians are also talking about it. Many government officials already perceive the horrific implications of Europe's nation-states losing their self-belief and descending into polar factionalism, with the continued existence of Europe or its constituent parts in question, but understand that speaking of it openly remains a career suicide, a conference at the European Parliament has heard. So once again, when people speak the truth, and they say, this is what I can see, this is what I can foresee happening, they will then be accused of trying to incite hate, trying to incite a race war, when in actual fact what they're trying to do is they're trying to prevent these things from happening. And if you look at nationalists in particular, nationalists, if there was a program made 25 years ago with Russell Brand, where he spent some time with Mark Collette, and it was basically mocking what Mark Collette was saying. And Mark was saying, look, the country within the next 20 years will be split up into these different ethnic conclaves. And that's exactly what has happened. And he warned back then that there would be trouble between these different groups. And now here we are 25 years later. And the same thing is now being said in the European Parliament at a conference that they have. It's now mainstream. So everything that the nationalists have been warning about over the decades is now finally starting to come true. And the nationalists have been accused of inciting hate by doing this, when in actual fact, what they've been trying to do is they've been trying to prevent violence, rape and murder. They've been trying to prevent all these horrific things that we see happening around us that are a result of the government's immigration policy, a multiculturalism policy. Getting back to this article here, it is a possibility that is quite close that the British people will pass into history like the Canaanites or the Arcadians, and it is an open question whether there will be a Europe in 50 years' time, a European Parliament conference heard from a panel of expert speakers. Interesting they mention the Canaanites there, because what happened to the Canaanites? Well, they became the Jews. I know Alan Green likes to pretend that the white people are actually Edom, but if you look at history and the recorded history, you look at Strabo, you look at Flavius Josephus and other authors, they will tell you that the Judahites that returned from Babylon to Judea ended up converting the Edomite Canaanites that were there, and the Edomite Canaanites then became Jews. And within about 100 years of that, the Edomite Canaanites had a king. That was Herod the Great. The Jews call him Herod the Great. I guess the Christians call him Herod the baby killer. And he put other Edomite Canaanites in all the top positions. There was an Edomite Canaanite as the high priest. The majority of the Pharisees were Edomite Canaanites. The Sadducees were Edomite Canaanites. And the part of the tribe of Judah that became Christian. And the one that was the Edomite Canaanites, they became known as the Jews. So the Canaanites didn't actually disappear from history. They just became known as the Jews. And I mean, it may be that some Jews today will call the European people, they might call them Amalek, or they might call them Edom, and that's just using a biblical insult, basically, because factually it's the Jews themselves that are the Edomites. Getting back to this here, because we went a little bit off topic there, hosted by French populist far-right firebrand Marion Maréchal, the granddaughter of National Front founder Jean-Marie Le Pen, and Sweden Democrats, a member of the European Parliament, Charlie Wimers, the Civil War, Europe at Risk conference launched a new report on the now widespread phenomenon of no-go zones and platformed thinkers on political instability. Maréchal opened the conference by reflecting that formerly peaceful and stable societies are rapidly transforming before our eyes into societies of violence and mistrust, stating that the main basis of trust between citizens is cultural homogeneity, which is now fast eroding. And we can particularly see that in Japan. I saw a tweet this morning that was mentioning about how the Japanese, you'll see 6-7-year-old Japanese children travelling on the subway, travelling on the underground trains just to get to school. And you just couldn't do that in a multicultural country like Britain anymore, because there would be a risk of those children being kidnapped or sexually abused. They just couldn't do it. But in Japan, they can do that because they have cultural homogeneity. Japan is still like 99% Japanese. I should imagine they could probably still do the same thing in China as well. And that's the reason why we can't do that here, is we no longer have cultural homogeneity. And the fact that this is now being talked about in the mainstream is really good news. These no-go zones, they've been coming about for years. In fact, Red Ice TV, they've had a little TV show that they do called No-Go Zone. And that was based on the fact that this was being exposed in Sweden. And the Swedish Prime Minister was saying, oh, we don't have any no-go zones. This is just being made up. And I believe Donald Trump talked about it back in 2017. He talked about the no-go zones in Sweden, and it was denied that there actually were any, even though there was at least 40 of them. I mean, there are parts in Britain where you will see graffiti saying no whites allowed after a certain time of day, and everybody there will be non-white, and there'll be a Sharia court somewhere. And the police pretty much have to ask permission from the community leaders before they do anything in that area. And that's what a no-go zone is. A while back, we had Sharia patrols in parts of London. And there was Muslims walking around preventing people from drinking alcohol outside, which is something you can do in Britain, but you can't actually do in America. Because they were trying to enforce Sharia law values on the people in that area, the same as preventing people from walking dogs in that area. All these are symptoms of no-go zones. In Sweden, you've got places like Malmo, where the police station has hand grenades thrown at it, bombs thrown at it, people using machine guns there. You have completely lawless areas. I think they first started off in Sweden and in France, but now we're starting to get them elsewhere. We have them in France because France has such a high percentage of Muslims that are there. And of course, Marion Maréchal, who started off this conference, she is French. Well, Europe is already under a great strain of diffuse guerrilla activity, she said, which takes various forms, including riots, looting, random attacks, anti-white racism, and terrorist attacks. Let's just look at Britain. We've had riots over the last 10 years, 15 years. 20 years we've been having these riots that are going on. We had Black Lives Matter, we had the looting there. We have so-called random attacks where the victim is white and the attacker is non-white, and we're told this is completely at random. But it's not at random if the victim is white and the attacker is non-white. Anti-white racism we see all the time, just on the mainstream media, for instance, and in the schools. And terrorist attacks, and we regularly get these terror attacks. So she is linking them all together and calling them diffuse guerrilla activity. And people may say, oh yes, but it's different groups that are involved in all of this. Yes, but the victims of it are always white people. So that's why it says diffuse guerrilla activity. These remarks were echoed by conference co-host Vimers, who noted the impact of mass migration on cultural cohesion. And that's been known for a long time as well. There was a big UN study that was actually done on diversity, and it said it was the largest study that's ever been done on diversity. And they said that it was anathema to cultural cohesion. It destroyed all cultural cohesion. The people that lived there no longer trusted each other. They no longer even trusted their own ethnic group. And they tended to hunker down and not take part in community activities and no longer care about where they were living. I forget the name of the report. I've discussed it many times on podcasts before. So this is factual. What are you saying here? The impact of mass migration on cultural cohesion. And it was the UN that did this study. So they could hardly deny it. The person that did the study sat on it for a couple of years because it completely disproved all of his left-wing notions about multiculturalism. The Swedish populist right politician reflected Western democracies that were once relatively homogenous societies have become deeply fragmented. Newcomers often share little in common with the indigenous population. More alarmingly, many have no intention of assimilating. Or just look at the number of people in the country that don't even speak the language. Look at the people in Britain now, and particularly in England, that don't even speak English. And we go out of our way to provide interpreters for them. Rupert Lowe and his Restore Party have said that anybody that doesn't speak English will be deported. Both politicians said they were driven to hold the conference by the hope of finding political answers to these problems and to prevent the horror of civil war from occurring at all. This is the point that I made earlier. The point of talking about these subjects is to find solutions to them. It's not because we want these things to happen. We don't want a civil war to happen. We want to prevent that from happening. We think the best way to prevent that from happening is to engage in a policy of remigration, reverse the government's previous migration policy with a remigration policy. That's the political answer to this. There are other answers to it. There's a community answer, which is what Patriotic Alternative are involved in, which is forming a pro-white community, an indigenous community that represents the indigenous community, just the same as all these other foreign communities have that are within Britain. They all have their community leaders, and they all try to act in support of one another. And all we advocate for is that the indigenous British people do the same. And of course, we get accused of being racists for doing so. Anglo-Canadian academic Professor David Betts of King's College London, who has rapidly gained prominence in European security discourse over his whistleblowing on the eroding of British and European democracy, society and social cohesion, was blunt in his remarks, telling the European Parliament meeting that Europe is on track for civil war. So how many times do people have to say this before people actually believe this? And obviously, because he's an academic, when he says this, he's not going to get sent to jail for it. But of course, nationalists have been saying this for a long time. They've been saying, look, we're in the middle of a race war, or we've got a race war that's actually coming. And of course, that's a massive exaggeration. We're not likely to actually have a race war. But that's the sort of thing that people might say when they can see what's going on here. But of course, if you say that, you can end up being jailed. I mean, that was one of the things that they used as evidence against me, was referring to us being in the middle of a race war. So it's not a good idea to say that. But as he says here, this is an academic saying, Europe is on track for civil war. And this is what we want to prevent. Observing that while it took a long time to break the foundations of Western self-belief, prosperity and competency, the job was now done And although a society like the United Kingdom is not quite at the point of total breakdown, nevertheless, it is experiencing polar factionalism, which has led to outbursts of violence and leaves the country vulnerable to a sudden downward spiral towards chaos, Professor Betts said. And it's not just ethnic either. I mean, particularly if you look in America, you've got this split between Republicans and Democrats, between the right and the left. And you've got the same here in Britain. You've got this split between the right and the left. You've got political splits as well as ethnic splits. He says, we are on track for a peasant revolt, a conservative uprising in which the ruled seek to punish their rulers for violating their obligations under the social contract and for changing the rules of the game against their wishes. It will look something like Italy's Years of Lead, the dirty wars of Latin America, or maybe the troubles of Northern Ireland, but on a larger scale. And Mark Collette has likened it to the sort of thing that we saw happening in Northern Ireland. And a precursor to that is all the flags that are going up. And that's a sort of precursor to the sort of problems that we saw in Northern Ireland happening. That's interesting. He says that there's going to be a conservative uprising here, because this is similar to what Dr. Edward Dutton says, for instance. He says that what's happening is the people that are on the left, they're not producing any children, they're aborting their children, or they're becoming feminists and not having any, or they're becoming lesbians and not having any, and there's less and less of them having children. The people that are having children are the conservative-minded, the religious-minded, and conservatism and religiosity are both actually heritable. So if your parents were conservative, your parents were religious, there's a high chance that you will also be conservative and religious. So more children are being produced that have higher religiosity and higher conservative views than the other side. The other side are not producing these children. So it's a similar thing that's been predicted by Edward Dutton in his most recent books, that there will be this conservative backlash just by the sheer numbers. Because if the people on the left don't have any children, then they're not going to be replacing themselves, are they? What is already a guarded society will become a radically more heavily fortified society as elites seek more protection with more walls, guards and surveillance. And we talked about this before, myself and Max Musson in Real Britannia. We talked about where is this all going to be heading, and he was of the view that there would be privatised police forces and there'd be privatised security that will look after the elites. And that seems to be what this Professor David Betts is saying here, that the elites will have more protection with walls, guards and surveillance. He continued, it will be bloody. The balkanisation of British life along ethnic lines is already underway. What I call assortative movement is already occurring, quite obviously in some places like Tower Hamlets in London, Spark Hill in Birmingham, which are already ethnic enclaves, zones of negotiated policing, with parallel legal systems, alternative economies, and zones of endemic and large-scale out-group sexual predation. This ought to be more generally frightening. He's obviously putting all of that in academic terms there, basically, but that's what a no-go zone is. The police have to talk to the community leaders before they go in there. The parallel legal system he's talking about is Sharia law. Zones of endemic and large-scale out-group sexual predation. Well, that is the grooming gangs. One of the other problems that we have with these places that he's highlighted here, Tower Hamlets, is that we have massive levels of corruption in the people that are supposed to be running Tower Hamlets. If you import the Third World, which is notorious for its corruption, then you are basically importing corruption into your country. Another part of the Third World, which is now starting to be noticed more and more, is all the rubbish that just gets thrown away and not put in a bin. Britain is now covered in litter. It's another point that Rupert Lowe's Restore Party have been making about just cleaning up all this litter. Where did all of this come from? We never used to have this. People never just used to throw their rubbish away. Everybody used to put their litter in a bin. If you go to the Third World, particularly places like India, and it's just trash everywhere. It's like a trash heap. The rivers are full of pollution. And we're starting to see the same thing now in Britain, particularly along the highways and the motorways. In government, there are plenty of people who understand fully the gravity of the situation, although it is, career-wise, terminal to speak of it openly. And that is why it is so good that Rupert Lowe is talking about this, because for too long our politicians have been too frightened to mention this, and they just go along with the flow. They don't want to upset the gravy train, I guess you could say. But anybody that is really concerned and has any integrity that can see what's happening to our country, they're going to want to do something about it. They're going to want to speak about it. But as he says here, you will be attacked for it. He says it's terminal career-wise to speak of these things because you will be cancelled. If you're an academic, you'll be cancelled. You will lose your tenure. You will not be able to speak in the universities. If you're a nationalist and you speak about this, then you're running the risk of having all your devices seized so that the police can go through them with a magnifying glass looking for any evidence of you perhaps once using a racial slur in a joke, as has happened to people and has seen people prosecuted for. So there is a huge risk with speaking about this, even though, as he says here, in government there are plenty of people who fully understand this, but they also understand it's terminal for them to speak of it openly. Austrian political scientist Dr. Ralph Schulhammer, who also spoke on the panel, didn't use the language of civil war, but rather pointed to Europe's history of bloody revolutions, discouraging the ever-present habit in left-wing discourse and the media of comparing the present political situation to the 1930s with persistent allusions to the rise of fascism. He instead pointed to parallels in the years leading up to the French Revolution, which he noted were characterised by failed harvests and rapid inflation. And that's interesting because, of course, that's what the mainstream media do. They will say, oh, it's a big rise of fascism, effectively because people are concerned about what is happening to their countries and they're turning to nationalism, which, of course, is linked with fascism and national socialism. But the reason why there is this rise in nationalism is because of all the multiculturalism, because of the mass immigration that has been going on. You can't fill the country up with a foreign population without the native population noticing it. I mean, you just cannot do that. And in times like this in the past, there have been violent revolutions, and we don't want to see a violent revolution. In most cases, wherever there is a violent revolution, you end up with people far worse than you had before. This is one of the reasons why here at Radio Albion we did the Truth Will Out radio series, and we looked at all of these different revolutions. I mean, we could see that you always end off with somebody worse off if it's a violent revolution. If it's a peaceful revolution, such as Gaddafi's Green Revolution or the National Socialist Revolution in Germany, which was at the ballot box, then you end up with a country that is much better. But if it's if the revolution involves violence and taking power through violence, then you end up with something like the Soviets, like the Russians ended up with under the Soviets. As observed by more than one participant of the conference, whether European peoples survive both migratory pressure in the first instance and the prognosticated civil war that is said to follow it in the second, to exist as distinct social, political and ethnic groups at the end of this century is an open question. Well, it's not exactly a question, is it? We know that in Britain, for instance, Indigenous Britons only make up 51% of all births. So within a couple of years, we're already going to be a minority amongst the babies. Give it 25 years and we will be a minority. Not the end of the century, just a quarter of a century away. So it's not an open question. I mean, this question has been answered. Professor Betts, for instance, pointed to the peoples of once great empires in the classical world, whose civilizations and peoples simply vanished. He said, where does Balkanization lead us? It leads to the extinguishing of Britain in the sense of a coherent cultural entity dominated by people genuinely sharing the titular identity of British. It leads to large-scale and widespread civil war. It is very possible that the Britons end up like the Canaanites or the Arcadians, a people of historic interest, their monuments visible here and there in some sort of ruination, of interest to archaeologists and historians. This would be a tragedy, but that is a very viable option in front of us, And in fact, it is a possibility that is quite close. And of course, again, we have talked here on Radio Albion about what's happening now, having happened in the ancient world. The same multiculturalism happened in the ancient world, and that led to the destruction of the ancient empires. I can think of one particularly interesting one, which was the Indus Valley Empire, which is where Pakistan is now. And they had a very highly civilized culture. They had three-story buildings. They had wells. They had writing. They had art. They had all the good things that you expect a civilization to have. But they also had an underclass. And the underclass was not the same ethnicity as the people at the top. And the people at the top had medical care. And the people at the underclass at the bottom didn't have medical care. And suddenly, the whole civilization gets smashed to pieces, and all the representations of the ruling ethnicity are smashed to pieces. All the images, all the statues smashed up, just the same as Black Lives Matter are smashing up the statues of old white men. And the civilization was destroyed. And the academics say, well, we don't know what happened there. We don't know if there was a disaster or what happened. I mean, to me, it seems very clear what happened. They engaged in multiculturalism, and the underclass rose up and smashed the upper class. And this is what happens when you have more than one ethnic group in a society. You will end up with each ethnic group competing. I mean, it can be just competing politically, or it can end up competing with violence for which group is going to be superior. You cannot have a house that is divided against itself. It will not stand, as it says in the New Testament. Ideally, you want one territory with one people group within that territory doing what's best for that people group. If you start bringing in other people groups, what's best for their people group might very well not be what is best for your people group. And that's what we see today. We see Muslims who don't like images, who don't like music, who don't like representations of their religious leaders. And you've got that in a culture of white Christian people who love music, who love art, who like comedy. And you cannot please one group without upsetting the other group. So you're just setting a country up for friction by bringing in these different disparate groups. And that's what he means here: balkanization, multiculturalism, different ethnic enclaves. And eventually they will descend into civil war. And that's what we see happen throughout history. And yet we ignore it. We think somehow today we are different. MEP Vimers asked even more bluntly, will there even be a Europe within 50 years? Will there be a Europe in 50 years? Revisiting some of his previous public comments over the past year, Professor Betts, a recognised expert on the fortification of modern urban spaces against asymmetric warfare, also reflected on the specifics of how a future theoretical civil war in the West would look. This inevitably will be defined by the apparent propensity of new migrant arrivals to gravitate to urban areas and create their own cultural enclaves, he said, which could make them vulnerable targets for would-be saboteurs. I mean, this is something we see. People do like to be surrounded by their own people. This is why when you have multiculturalism, you'll have an area that will be Pakistani. You'll have an area that will be Jamaican. You have an area that will be Chinese. People like to live amongst their own people. It's only natural. And also these groups, when they come here, they want to go to the urban areas. They don't want to be living in the country. At the moment, we've got this big push to try and encourage Muslims and non-whites to go into the country. But why would they go into the country? In their own countries that they come from, the countryside is dangerous. It's filled with bandits and criminals. It's not seen as improving yourself in any way to go to the country. Again, it's a completely different way of looking at it. And also, if you have urban areas, then everything is there in the urban area that you need. All the shops are there, all the benefits are there, the hospitals are there. And this is another thing that we see. We see that the newcomers to a country, they will gravitate to the urban areas, and all the white people will leave the urban areas. They will flee from the urban areas. to get away from the diversity. This is why now London is only 35% Indigenous British. Professor Bett said this would be the siege of urban areas, but with a few 21st century twists. In many ways, it will be reminiscent of the siege of Sarajevo, but much more dominated by paramilitary actors using system disruption tactics. Most importantly, infrastructure attack to degrade and destroy the life support systems of urban non-native enclaves. The political object is very simple. It is to compel non-natives to leave. The strategy is to create conditions of life in the cities so intolerable that leaving is preferable to staying. It is not an implausible theory of victory because its central premise, the instability of the modern urban condition, at the best of times, is something scholars of urban studies have been warning against for 50 years already. Well, I'm not so certain that you need paramilitary actors using system disruption tactics to do this. And all you'd have to do is say, well, everybody has to speak English. If anybody is of foreign heritage, they're not allowed to get any benefits. They're not allowed to have a council house. You're not going to have interpreters. And if you just made improvements like that to the country, then people would self-deport, especially if you were offering them financial incentives as well. Then they would voluntarily leave. There's no need for there to be physical violence. I mean, just look at what's happening in America. There's no more immigration, is there? There's no more illegal immigration. And the vast numbers of people are deporting themselves because they know that if they don't do that, then ICE will remove them. Okay, there have been some highly visible instances of ICE bundling people into the back of vans, but probably not that many when you look at it, the full number in the scheme of things. But just because of the fact that that was shown on the television, that's encouraged these people to self-deport and to take the money and to go. So you don't need to have paramilitary tactics. All you need to have is carefully placed political policies. And again, this is what Rupert Lowe will do with Restore. They will change political policies to make it an even playing field so that everybody has to speak English. And only the British, Indigenous British, will have rights to the heritage of Britain rather than anybody that just comes to the country having access to Britain's heritage. Professor Batts continued, fuel systems are easy to attack. They are flammable, if not explosive, by definition. They are difficult to repair and expensive to replace. In fact, they are impossible to replace in civil war conditions when no insurance is available. Moreover, disruption of fuel has very rapid knock-on effects of everything else logistically. Most importantly, the food distribution system, which is the traditional weapon of siege craft. Well, we can see the facts of this today, can't we, with what's happening in Iran at the moment. The disruption of fuel has a rapid knock-on effect on everything else, and we can see that just from Trump's disastrous war in Iran, let alone in the future. I must say that I don't really think that these last little bits of predictions that he's making are likely to happen. I think it's far more likely that there will just be political changes that were actually made, and that people will self-deport rather than having to have like paramilitaries circling towns full of non-whites and laying siege to them. Breitbart London report, but I mean, that is a possibility, and this is an academic that is telling us that this is a possibility of what could happen if Europe remains multicultural and doesn't change its immigration policies. Breitbart London reported earlier this week on the new paper published during Marischal and Weimar's European Parliament conference on the accelerating issue of so-called no-go zones. The report used public data on factors like crime rates, sexual violence, youth gangs, unemployment, the proportion of school finishers, anti-Semitism, homophobia, the number of mosques, attacks on firefighters, and the presence of charities and NGOs to rate neighbourhoods across Europe on their level of integration in the common culture. By these metrics, the report stated that it had identified up to 1,000 no-go zones. So we've gone from the Swedish Prime Minister denying that there are any no-go zones 5 or 6 years ago, to now there being up to 1,000 no-go zones in Europe. And that's what the point of this conference is. It's saying, look, this is the situation that we are in. We want to avoid civil war. Something needs to be done about it. If nothing is done about it, there is possibly that there would be violence, there would be actual strife like there is in the troubles in Northern Ireland going on the streets of Europe between these different ethnic communities if something isn't done about this. And as I say, you can contrast that with places like Japan, where 6 and 7 year old school kids are quite safe just to travel on the underground, on the subway, to get to their school. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.